Hello, Nicolette Buller. It's my absolute pleasure to speak with you today. I gather you're still in ISO with COVID. How is your campaign for Bradfield going in ISO?
Actually, this is my freedom day. I've been out to some pre-polling today for the first time with a mask just to be safe, but it feels good. It feels good. There's a great sense of maybe just this time that our very, very safe seat may no longer be very, very safe anymore.
I've followed Voices for Bradfield over a long time. They've been very community-minded, very attached to the Indi way of genuinely collecting voices. But Bradfield, there it is on the North Shore, ultra safe, and it isn't getting much attention. McKellar, North Sydney, Wentworth, Warringah. What is it about Bradfield that makes it an extra big task for an Independence Day candidate to get traction?
I think that there is a proportion of the electorate that has given up thinking that their vote can make a difference. It's been a safe seat, if you want to call it that. I don't like to call it that any longer, but for 72 years we've had five men, all sort of the same ethnic background, all Liberal Party, and it's not, in my opinion, that the values of the electorate has changed that much, even though the constituency and the makeup of it is forever evolving. I just think that people are waking up to the realisation that the Liberal Party of 2022 has moved so far away from the values that they themselves know to be who they are and what they value, that they just feel like they've had enough. So it's tough. There's definitely a massive wave of discontent. My biggest challenge, though, Margot, is convincing people that, letting them know I exist, and then once they know I exist, pretty much that's a 9 out of 10 conversion. But it's getting that brand penetration with such a small and short runway.
So place Bradfield for us on the North Shore in comparison to the other seats and tell me just how safe it is. I gather that Paul Fletcher won very easily on primary votes last time.
Yeah, he did. So we're in the upper North Shore of Sydney. People move here because it's a really lovely, leafy place with a lot of great public, independent and private schools. So people, it's a real place for families. It's nestled to the west of McKellar. So we're inland a bit from the coast, but we've also got to the southeast, we've got Warringah. Rosalie Steggles already, claimed independence for the seat of Warringah. And then to the south, we have North Sydney.
So wow. You're surrounded by hotspots, babe.
That's it. But it is really safe. So when Mr. Fletcher was put into this seat back three terms ago at a by-election that the Liberals had, it was safer. So it has moved slowly against the Liberals each time. But last election in 2019, primary vote went to him just under 61%. Yeah.
And what was the Labor vote?
20.
20. Right. So you've got to swing 20% of Liberal voters across to you and grab a few first preferences from Greens, Labor, minor parties to ensure that second spot. Is that right?
Pretty much that's it. I can understand why people aren't looking at Bradfield very much. We're not a marginal seat, but I can say that this very big gap between first and second place is a mirror of the Karen Phelps by-election in Wentworth in 2018. So it's not to say it's an easy job, but to come in second, providing that there is enough discontent with the traditional Liberal voters so that the swing against the incumbent is, big enough to keep the primary vote for the Liberals at around 40%, it's actually technically possible on on a number of scenarios that we've, you know, we run these things, don't we, thinking that we might understand how to read the future. But we do, we win out of 3 out of 15 times by about 720 to 1,100 votes. So it's possible, but it's really tight and every single vote counts.
Have you attracted disaffected Liberal voters to your campaign? Because it's, I've just found over time it's so important that you have a core of Liberal voters to be able to spread that word and introduce you as a someone who could be a genuine voice for the values of the electorate.
The answer to that question is yes. I haven't done a statistical survey of the volunteers that we have, but of the nearly 500, at least 6 out of 10 say, well, I've never done anything like this before. That's most of them. But 6 out of 10 of them are like, yeah, I've voted Liberal my entire life. I've had enough. And they're not all women. There's a lot of women, a lot of particularly seniors. They've got a little more time, but also they've seen better days. They know what's possible from our parliament, from our leaders, and from the Liberal Party. And they just feel that the current Morrison-Joyce government is not representing their values nor their priorities. And I think they've had enough.
So what are those former Liberal voters that have put their hand up to participate in their democracy to change things, what are their key concerns and issues that they think that the Liberal Party has left them on?
Particularly taking action on climate change. I had one former Liberal voter talk last week with me just before I went into ISO about how she just didn't understand this was such a great opportunity, and she was just talking about the economics of it. She comes out of finance like I do, and she's just saying it's just there's no downside to acting on climate. She just doesn't understand it. So this wasn't just about handing the planet on to kids or grandkids or whatever in a better state. This was purely an economic reason that she was frustrated with the current government's lack of plan, if we have one past 2050. But by and large, the thing that gets everybody's heads nodding when I'm in the streets, when I say, do you want a federal ICAC, which in New South Wales is the independent Commission Against Corruption, that is a 9 out of 10. Let's just nod our head no matter who we voted for before. That cuts through every time.
It's an amazing issue because overwhelming public support, and you know the biggest supporters of a federal integrity commission are One Nation voters. And Helen Haynes' bill, which I'm assuming you would back, attracted support from debate from everyone from Bob Catter, Craig Kelly, to all the independents, to One Nation, to Jackie Lambie. There's just a feeling, isn't there, that number one, it's got corrupt in Canberra. And number two, that we really do have to clean up politics for the sake of all of us.
Well, that's right. And look, Mr. Fletcher has got his How to Vote card out, and he has number two, Clive Palmer's United Australia Party. And if that is not a kick in the face to the voters of Bradfield, I don't know what is, because you know, what kind of secret deals are going on there?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And I think that's just further confirmation that this instinct that people in Bradfield have about wanting to clean up the corruption that's there is absolutely necessary. And that's, you know, that the major parties aren't getting that done. And that's where the value of independence comes in, because we can hold them to account for something with more teeth and something that actually could help clean up some of this alleged corruption.
It stinks. Let me give you an example in Hughes. The Liberal candidate preferenced an independent, Linda Seymour, as number two. Craig Kelly then announced that in retaliation for the Liberals not preferencing him, he would preference Linda Seymour, number two. I found out today that there was a last-minute change of heart and Craig Kelly is now preferencing the Liberals after screaming about them. There is a very, very big deal going on here. It's happening all over. I think Dave Sharma has preferenced the UAP. I don't know what it is, but I would really like a Federal Integrity Commission to find out, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would, Margot. That's exactly right. And it's not just, I mean, that's, you know, a great example, but, you know, why are we the one nation in the world that hasn't moved to act on climate change? Yeah. You know, we are just so beholden to the, you know, the money that pays for the parties to stay in power is having influence over the policy that is absolutely the bedrock of our economy. And it's just not okay. It was working in finance and investment. It was frustrating for a decade or two. Now I'm just seeing money, superannuation and other money going, mums and dads' savings in being invested into China, into the EU, into the United States, for all those componentry parts of things that go into our clean energy future. They're not coming into Australia because we just don't have a plan. It's too risky to invest. It costs too much. So, you know, the only one hurting from this is Australia. We've got to end this roadblock on the climate issue. And the thing that's going to help that and for so many other things is getting that federal ICAC through.
So just tell me, what is your expertise in this area? Because I know my chief reporter, Wayne, says it'd be wonderful to get Nick into Canberra, because she's actually a really, really big expert on how to maximise the opportunity for Australia from a serious climate change policy.
That's very kind of Wayne. But yes, someone said to me the other day, you may well be the most climate credentialed candidate running for the 47th Parliament from any party, any candidate anywhere across Australia. And I was like, oh, I mean, we've got Claire Mains in Casey. She's very strong as well on sustainability, but it's possible. And I cut my teeth in energy efficiency policy in New South Wales government, but I have worked in think tanks, climate institute, but with the land-based side. So how to get farmers part of the climate solution so that they could opt in and improve on-farm practices. This was a really strategic play to see whether the National Farmers Federation could fall in line with acting on climate change. So at that time, the ALP was more comfortable to push through an emissions trading scheme. I've also worked at the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, which, hooray, is still going, that co-invests with private sector to in things like solar and biomass and other type technologies as part of our clean energy future. And then I moved, to be completely frank, I got a little disheartened with working in public policy and with politics. So I moved my career I had a small segue after Kevin Rudd was elected. He was going to be the one that had my back. He was going to be the one that was going to fix climate change. But Margot, he didn't. He heard the Garneau Review recommendations to reduce emissions by 5% on a 2005 baseline. It was just woefully so. I mean, the recommendations said at least 15%.
But Nikki still couldn't get that through. I mean, remember when the Greens and the Liberals voted together after they assassinated Malcolm when he tried, you know, like,
absolutely.
Whoa, it's hard, isn't it?
It is. And so I went into capital markets because if I could translate the opportunity for our nation in clean energy into earnings and growth, people with their spreadsheets, when they look through a risk prism and through a money prism, go, yes, everyone's doing it internationally. Like 75% of our bilateral trading partners and people that buy our gas and our coal have emission reduction targets, not for 2050, but for 2030 or 2035. They will not want to take our coal assets any longer within 8 years because it's inconsistent with their domestic policies. We've got some serious issues about we're just not moving our economy off last century's industries fast enough, and we've just squandered 25 years, which is I find it appalling.
One of the things that's intrigued me about your campaign is that you, I think, are the most transparent of all the independent state candidates in terms of donations, which doesn't really help you because, if you've got a low threshold for disclosure, a lot of people who want to hedge their bets or stay private don't do it. But I think that's a proof of integrity. And I would like to ask you the obvious question. If the people of Bradfield vote for you and put their voice in play in a hung parliament where you have a say, would you make, besides a strong federal integrity commission, like an honest politics sweep? Would you like some serious donation reform and some serious truth in advertising? What's your starting point for negotiations if the voices, if Bradfield has a seat at the table on who forms government?
Yeah, I have actually, believe it or not, plans for 3 terms in government, Margot. So, for the first term, after legislating Zali Steggall's climate bills and that federal ICAC with TEEF, they're deal breakers. The next piece, once we've got the government working, is absolutely about campaign finance reform. And people say, "Oh, you've taken money from Climate 200." That comes up as well. And
So you
yes,
didn't get much, did you?
no, but still, it's not about how much. If you're going to run on integrity, you absolutely need to have it. It honestly doesn't matter. A little bit is still, there's a line in the sand. So I did ask Climate 200 how much did people in Bradfield donate to your fund? Because I'll take that money back, because it was really hard to raise money in the first instance. I think we got a little bit more. We got $100,000, and the campaign has raised, I'm very proud of this, $360,000. Quite a war chest. Obviously, the biggest war chest is our nearly 500 volunteers who don't get paid, who turn up. But the thing about having to, it's sort of like having quotas for women. The rationale behind saying yes, approaching Climate 200 and asking for some of that money in the beginning was because we wouldn't have had a campaign. I lent 40 grand, my husband and I, to the campaign to start with. It was really, really hard to build momentum and attract interest. So, on one hand, in order to build this campaign, in order to get elected, so that we can do campaign finance reform, that was a calculated decision around whether that would be construed to be not as independent as it could be. And on the balance of it, we decided that we just won't have a campaign unless we do. And I'm okay. I asked Climate 200. You're right, Margot, on my donations acceptance policy. I'm only taking money from individuals. And if I am from organisations, there's only been two. There's Climate 200, which principally are mums and dads donations anyway, and the Voices of Bradfield, which is another aggregating organisation who's received donations from people, not just in Bradfield actually, but from adjacent electorates like Bennelong and Barara, where, in their opinions, they don't have particularly strong independents running. Some have emerged since then, but that basically having to have money in order to get a seat at the table was something that it was uphill, but had to do it. But you're right, there's Fair Democracy Framework is the basis of what I want to be pushing for. And it goes to maximum spend, it goes to maximum raising of money. So I've capped my. Not capped what I will receive, but anything that people donate that's over $1,500, which is the tax deductibility level as well, those names are going up on my website within 30 days of the election. That should be real-time disclosure. That really,
And
we've got the tech for that. It just should be.
I know, but I mean, talk about tying your hand behind your back, because the opposition, Paul Fletcher, he can get 14,500 several times from the one donor and not have to donate. I mean, it's, you know, I really, really admire what you've done. Can we just end up by, sorry for, to be a bit personal, but, you know, you had a really good job. You weren't in politics. Voices for Bradfield talked you into it. We're now on the home stretch. How have you coped? How have you grown? And what will you do after the election if you don't pull this off?
Really good questions. how have I grown? It was actually about 2 weeks before I saw Mr. Fletcher in the street, which was the nail in the coffin for me saying, putting my expression of interest into Voices of Bradfield. But it was 2 weeks before that I realised that personally, I'm not responsible for everybody in the world. I kind of, it took, I know that sounds kind of crazy, but for me to release that was all it took for me to actually step into the place to play my role as one of the many hundreds of volunteers as part of this community movement. So I think how I've grown is just to say I'm doing what I can. And I think everything that I've done in my career and personally has led me to be able to do this role right now. Will we win? Who knows? We'll have to wait maybe until May 24 in case there's a recount. But your third question, Margot, was what am I going to do? My entire career has been about, and maybe this is the Dutch heritage in me, but it's been about calling out BS. It's been about turning up and throwing a few grenades into different industries and trying to bring better accountability into decision-making and making sure that people are the center of decisions. And that's just something I'm going to do until my last breath. It's what I've always done. So I'm not sure. I have a, before I decided to do this, and at the end of my last spiel, I have particular passion in how I can bring some of our finance money, and there's plenty of it, into working with traditional owners to do some really aggressive restoration of landscapes in our region. I think there's a great healing that needs to happen culturally and for our planet, and I'm really excited about the work that I've been working at the Responsible Investment Association with our First Australians, and I'm really love to continue building those relationships and seeing if we can get some mainstream superannuation money into some great opportunities, which is a win-win-win in terms of climate resilience and climate mitigation and First Australians doing, you know, self-determining. So that's a passion, but I'm a white woman, so we'll see. I'll go a lot more, maybe 2 decades of working in that to do it well.
You know, I'd just like to finish off with this. I've been following Susie Holt's, you know, long shot campaign in Groom. And after all this time, you know, just a regular person out there, I thought she'd be falling over with tiredness. And I saw a picture of her on the pre-poll yesterday and she's shining. It's like she feels good. And looking at you today, you've got the same feeling. It's not being tired. It's like, how exciting and incredible has this been to do something I would never have thought of doing? What is your state of mind at the moment?
No, absolutely. Do you know what it is? Every single day, many times, I'm the one getting inspired by the conversations that people are having for the first time in our electorate, with their neighbours, with their family members, with their friends, about politics. That's not something that would happen in Bradfield unless, you know, we're onto the third bottle of red wine and someone throws a punch or something. That's just not a thing. So it is exciting because of, you know, to have this vibrancy and this courage to have a conversation about what we choose as voters for those people that represent us in the Australian Parliament, which should be the highest office with the best behaviours, with leaders that we really want to get behind because they've got a vision for our country, they've got a plan, you know, and they're taking everyone, you know, they're not leaving one behind, they're taking us all with them. We couldn't be further from the truth. So that's, I think I'm buoyed and why I'm so perky
and is that's because
that's the energy I'm getting from the people in the electorate.
And that's why whatever happens, you've won. Susie says the same thing in Groom. In these very safe seats, no one talks politics. But to have a participatory democracy with people coming in for the first time, you've run so many policy forums, you're available to everyone. It's exciting. So I'd just like to congratulate you, and win or lose, you have my respect and admiration. And thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with me during your COVID ISO.
Thanks, Margot. It's been a real delight. Thank you. And don't run me out just yet. I think we are making history here in Bradfield.
Well, I believe in miracles because I reckon Susie can win in Groom. So let's go, miracles.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Margot.
Thank you.